welcome to the Magic Musicals and Theatre Podcast, and my guest this week is Craig Revel Horwood. I'm in the dressing room I've been in this dressing room before, actually, because I was in this dressing room when I interviewed Miranda when she was in Annie, and I'm in the same dressing room again now, but I have a different person to interview. It's quite different, actually. I'm playing the same part as Miranda played, but I have to say, you wouldn't think in a casting, ooh, Miranda's not available. I know. Let's go for Craig Revel Horwood.
Yeah,
that would it's odd.
But then I did play the part before Miranda. She took over from me, to be honest.
That's right. Played it on tour, didn't you?
Yeah, I played it on tour and originated it with this particular company and with this set and the whole sort of
thing. It's your part?
Well, it was, yes. But, of course, I was not available for the West End. Far too busy.
Too busy.
But thankfully, 10 weeks became available when Miranda was leaving. So it was really wonderful to reinvent it again, you know, after having some time off the part. It was great to come back and make it better. You know, it's great to have an opportunity to revisit, I think, all your roles, you know, because you always find something about the role that you didn't know before. And there's always other ways to play it, and it was wonderful. So it's like coming home, and it's just wonderful to be back in the West End in a lead, and I'm really, really loving it. I love the part. I love Miss Hannigan. She's a misunderstood creature, I think, you know, and a wonderful, wonderful woman. However, I mean, she does go to the dark side quite a lot in the show, and I rather enjoyed that. And it's great playing someone, you know, a villain. I think they're more interesting parts to play. I mean, I do that at Panto. Of course, every year I play a villain, either it be Hook or the Wicked Queen in Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, which, of course, I'm going to be doing in Southampton this year.
Right.
But
which is why you're doing a limited season here.
Yes.
Because you're off to do Panto.
Here. Yeah, otherwise I would have run until all through Christmas, which I would have enjoyed immensely because it's less learning, number one, over Christmas. But and it's probably, well, they're different parts, because one, in Panto you can break the fourth wall and I have to be Craig Revel Horwood. In Annie, I'm Miss Hannigan and I have to play her for real.
So yeah, it's a proper part.
Yeah, it's a proper part, which I absolutely love. And I've enjoyed the last 7 weeks, having 3 weeks left now to play her. So I'm just going to enjoy every minute of it.
And who thought of a man playing the role of Miss Hannigan? Because as you say, in Panto, that's traditional. We do that.
Yes. I mean,
the Americans think we're very weird for it, but we do it in Britain.
Yeah.
But I had never thought of it. I mean, I saw this with Sheila Hancock years and years and years ago. So I'd never thought of it as being played by a man.
No. And I don't think that is the point. I think any actor can play any gender. It just depends on what you can do. I sing, I dance, I act. And as women, you know, I have the right, of course, to be called actors, you know, and fought for that. I think it's important that we can all play any parts. That opens up, you know, a whole host of casting for women as well to play men.
Now, I think you're the first choreographer that we've had on our Musicals and Theatre Podcast. We've talked to a lot of performers, we've talked to directors, writers. Don't think we've ever had a choreographer on, and there was a few questions I want to ask sort of specifically about that. So why do you think certain dancers, because you were a dancer originally,
yes,
trained in Australia as a dancer, we all watched Who Do You Think You Are?
Yes.
or Who Are You, as I used to call it. Anyway, why do you think certain dancers become choreographers? What leads you from just being a performer to choreographing?
I think the reason why I became one is because I was beginning to have injuries. Also, you're up against 16-year-olds. I was 30 at the time, and I was auditioning for shows, and you'd have to do a tap routine, a classical routine, a jazz routine, and then, you know, any other combination that they would want you to do. Then you sing, and then you act, and do all of that. And then when you're dancing up against, at 30, dancing up against 16-year-olds, you feel like a grandfather. You know, and the legs around you are going higher and faster. And and it's really difficult. And I thought, what am I going to do? I can't dance forever. It's a limited thing, because your body will run out, you know, in time, like any footballer.
I was going to say, football is the same thing, career's short.
Exactly, the career is short, and also for sprinters, also for tennis players, you know, you're not going to get someone 60 still doing it and being at the top of their game. So you do have to consider that, and a lot of dancers forget that when they start out, because you have high hopes that you're just going to dance forever, because it's something that you want to do and love. So I decided intellectually to make that decision, and before my body completely gave out, because I was having knee injuries, shoulder pains and all of that sort of stuff, and I just thought, this is crazy, I need to do something else. And then I was offered to put on a show for Susan Stroman called Crazy For You in South Africa, and I thought, maybe this is my opportunity to see whether I like going on the other side, you know, to sit in the dark and direct and choreograph. And I re-choreographed her show using her material, and absolutely loved working with the company in South Africa, and fell in love with being that side of it where you can actually love, nurture, embrace people in the arts and make them the stars, and to have an enormous amount of creative freedom. And then I did a show called Pal Joey at Chichester Festival Theatre, and that really put me on the map as a choreographer, because that was something where I could just do by myself and be responsible for all of the dancing. And there was it was wall-to-wall dance that in that show, and I absolutely loved it. Of course, I earned no money that year, you know, because I was setting up myself, you know, from dancing to become a choreographer. So you have to do, you know, work, arty party type work for very little money, and to become known. And I received great reviews, and then other producers seemed to be interested in taking me on, and that's where it all started. And then I just kept working, and it was just amazing. And then after about 10 years I decided that I would like to direct as well, and I did that.
We can hear some background noise of cast and warming up. Probably will, children, probably Annie children.
Yes, we'll be hearing
orphans, little orphans.
Yeah, we're hearing Streams of Tomorrow soon. Yes, but yes, you will hear that. It's all coming through the tannoy, darling, which means it's getting closer to showtime. Yeah.
Do you like sort of nurturing the less able dancer in your choreography?
Yes, I think you're only as good or you're only as strong as your weakest link. You know, the weakest dancer in your company, you have to gear towards them and try and push them up to a certain standard. And I don't think you can really do much more than that. You know, when I'm casting, I try and cast as evenly as possible with people that are just incredible. You know, and that's the beauty about what I do in the theatre, as opposed to what I judge on Strictly Come Dancing, for instance, because I'm lumped with the people that are coming on that, and I don't have any choice
lumped
in casting.
Lumped with is a very good way of putting it.
Sometimes
yes,
they are a bit lumpy. Yes. But still, I don't get a choice, and I'm a judge on that. I'm not a love, nurture, embrace teacher or choreographer on it. You know, I just have to be there and sit dance for 1:30 and then have to decide on it, whether it's good or bad, and hopefully give them advice for the following week. And I do a similar thing, I suppose, as a director choreographer. You know, I'm correcting people all the time, I'm giving them notes, I'm making their performances better, and that's the whole point. You know, you want the person that's in your show on stage to stand out and be absolutely the best they possibly can be, like any coach of any sport would do. You know, you don't want to be lying.
But
are
you a bit kinder to your cast than you are to the contestants?
Well, I've employed them, you see, and I love them already for what they can do. It's my job to make sure that they don't let themselves down or let me down. Because my name's on it.
Because otherwise they might be crying in their dressing rooms.
Yes, well, no one wants that.
No.
Although that happens on Strictly a lot.
I saw your Who Do You Think You Are. Of course, you were brought up in Australia, and the programme took you back to Australia, and you came over to London because that's where the opportunities were.
Absolutely.
Do you think there are now more opportunities back in, say, Sydney or whatever? Would you ever go back and work there?
Well, times have changed, and yes, of course, I'd love to go back home and work in that respect in the theatre as a choreographer or a director in any sort of way, shape or form, and even I would go back as a performer. But the theatre gigs are limited there because there's only a certain amount of people that will go and see the theatre, unlike here where you get a lot of travellers coming through, you know, people from abroad who come to the West End specifically to see big shows, you know, in the West End. In Sydney and Melbourne in Australia, they're limited runs. You're lucky to get 6 months out of a show.
Right.
So in answer to your question, yes, I'd go back if I had the opportunity and the time. And I generally spend 6 weeks of the year there anyway, just on holiday seeing my family. So I do get my fill of Australia, although not necessarily working there.
And you talked about suffering from anorexia and when you were younger.
Yes.
And I worked with dancers 30 years ago, and I have to say, weight was a massive issue for the dancers.
Yeah,
and
it always
do you
is.
Think it's still? Do you think that situation's improved at all?
I think it's improved a lot, because nowadays people that are trained are taught balanced nutrition, and in my day we were never taught about that. You just had to be thin. You just had to be toned, thin, and look amazing. You know, and no one wanted to be fat. I guess there is a good reason for that, because you're on stage, you know, flaunting your body about, and especially if you're in skimpy costumes, you know, you don't want sort of fat hanging over your G-string, do you? You know, so people do get paranoid, and I think that does make you even more paranoid. I just remember I thought I was fat, but I had, you know, body dysmorphia in that way. I would look at myself, and I was extremely thin when I look back at the photos, but always thought that I was fat. I'd only look at the fat bits. You know, and and then I went on a diet of lettuce leaves for 2 weeks. It was like ridiculous, absolutely stupid when I look back at it. But I was paranoid and not wanting to get fat, always wanting to think that I needed to be thin. But actually, nowadays, bodies have changed in the industry as well. Certainly commercial dancers, all the blokes are all pumping iron now and on high protein diets.
They're huge,
they're huge. They've got big muscles. They've got to have a six pack. They've got to have pecs. Mm-hmm. They've got to have biceps. They've got to have lats, you know, and they've got to be toned and amazing looking now, you know, to be a commercial dancer. Ballet dancers generally stay the same size, because you're dancing 8 hours a day and that doesn't let up, and you have a ballet body, you know, and you can't be too bulky in ballet. And as I was a commercial dancer, sort of in shows like West Side Story, you know, it would have aided me to have a bit of muscle on me. But I did manage to learn about nutrition later on when I was about 22, 23, and went to the gym, really studied the body and proteins and all of that. And then I was going on stage naked in a play. So I felt paranoid about that, but I didn't want to be skinny, skinny, skinny. I wanted to be muscular. So the only way I went to a gym, and the only way they said, they said, you are way too thin. You need to start eating a lot and also training a lot. And I did. And that sort of worked. And I felt much, much better about myself. I became more and more confident. And became a better dancer for it and a better person for it, and then got over that. But I think you live with that issue for the rest of your life. We all do.
When you're in a job that is about your body, basically.
When you see people, ex-dancers, that you haven't seen for, like, say, 10 years, which I do, the first thing they'll say, don't look at my body, don't look at my weight, I know I put on weight. You know, the first thing they say to you is that. So people still have those issues, I think, you know, and you live with them. You just learn to deal with them, I think, in a different way, and learn to not torture yourself, you know. Mm. And I have sort of learned to do that. And if you do eat a balanced diet and exercise, the weight doesn't actually go on. But I think a lot of dancers who have danced up into 30, 35 are really sick of dieting, are really sick of exercise. They don't want to dance ever again. And then they eat the same amount that when they would normally be burning up calories. And that's why footballers, rugby players, athletes, all turn to blubber, don't they?
Yeah, because they're used to burning 5,000 calories a day, and then they're not burning 5,000 calories
a day. So it is a dilemma, I think, in that respect.
Yeah.
But thankfully, I got over the anorexia bit. You know, I was never bulimic. I tried to do that, but I just couldn't bring myself to
it. And all the dancers I knew used smoking as a way of... they chain-smoked, because was a way of eating, of suppressing the appetite.
Absolutely.
Not recommended, has to be said, especially as you need your lungs when you're a dancer. Right. I mean, dancers are fitter than any athlete, if you look at the test.
Oh,
a dancer comes out top of any, you know, like triathletes or anyone.
Because they're using every part of their body in various different ways, you know, and it's very disciplined.
So when you became a judge on Strictly... Actually, how did you become a judge? Did you audition to be a judge on Strictly?
I had a screen test.
Okay.
Yeah, they whittled people down to the people that they wanted to see. And I just received a phone call. And then my agent said, oh, you've really got to take this call. You know, it's an exciting new project for BBC One. And it's about dance and it's judging. And I said, all right, well, I'll have a phone call about it. And then I literally just had a very quick phone call, 10-minute phone call, where they... rattled off some questions about what I would say in certain situations. And then from that phone call, they said they'd like to see me, you know, up at the Beeb for a screen test. So I raced up there in the lunch break and did a screen test, and I was just literally looking at a little monitor and had to comment on it, and they said that's great, you know, because I was saying you know, it was terrible what I was saying. I said the woman can't even walk down the stairs, let alone dance when she gets onto the dance floor. I said, I don't know who that boy
but that's
is.
That's why we love you.
I said, I don't know who that boy is, but he's got the bowest legs I've ever seen in my life. If he's a professional dancer, I'll eat my hat. And then of course they said, oh, can you sum the whole dance up, you know, that I just viewed in three words? And I said, yes, dull, 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 darling. And that were the first three words out of my mouth, because the first show on Strictly was scripted. Obviously, well, no one knows that. Yeah,
it was they do
scripted.
Now.
Yeah, they do now. But it was scripted, and then we changed that later on. But of course, the couple that I was talking about on that monitor turned out to be Natasha Kaplinsky and Brendan Cole, who went on to win the series. So what do I know?
You see, now there's always a scandal in Strictly, and we've recently had the massive scandal of the Aston story. And I mean, I loved him. And then I heard what you said, which was that if we didn't vote for him, then we couldn't expect him to still be there. And I hold my hand up. It is entirely my fault. I didn't vote. I didn't get on my telephone.
No one that, did.
But the good thing is, because Gabby Logan tweeted, and she is, I know Gabby, and as she said, it only takes 10 years to get over that.
Yeah.
That disappointment of being voted off, as she was before her husband, who couldn't dance.
Yeah,
let's face
and
it.
I tried to save Gabby, I believe, and then the other judges, voted for someone else.
So presumably, well, it'll all come out in the wash, won't it? It'll all be fine in the end. And, Strictly's about having a scandal, isn't it?
Yeah, but I always stand by my scores as well. There's no, you know, there's a lot wrong with Aston's Viennese waltz, but people love
his
him.
Costume. That was wrong.
That it didn't suit it, no.
No.
You know, for the people at home, I don't think they were voting to be probably because of that. But that's not my job to comment on that particular thing. But it's when the music and the piece and the choreography don't all come together and make it wonderful. You know, he's a fantastic dancer. And I was pegging him for the final, definitely.
Yeah.
I love watching him dance. And out of the two, out of Molly and Aston, Aston is the better dancer. But unfortunately, the rules being the rules, the judges can only vote not on past or previous things that have occurred or ability or talent in that way, which I would love to do, because I would say I think the most talented dancer is, but they had a bad week, Aston, and I could have saved him. But we had to vote on merit on the night, on that 1:30 of dance. And sadly for Aston, that was his dilemma and downfall. You know, if he had have had another dance that was amazing, but then he probably wouldn't be in the dance off anyway. So it was.
Do you mix a lot with the contestants? Do you become friends with them, or do you keep yourselves quite separate as judges?
Separate during the show, but I become friends with people after the event, after they've gone out. You know, I think, and generally on tour, because I do the Strictly Come Dancing.
I was going to ask you about the tour, which you're doing next year.
Yes. And what I do there is direct it and choreograph bits of it. Jason Gilkinson does the majority of the choreography. I do the choreography for the singers and stuff. And we're all in the same hotel, so we see each other. You know, we go to the bar after.
And do you judge on the Strictly Live Tour? I've never been to the Strictly Live Tour.
Yeah, it's great.
So every night you judge.
Yeah, well, something
goes
wrong.
They do the same dance, and
they do the same dance. And generally, they get better and better and better. So if they start on a four, they generally end up on an eight.
Yes.
By the end of it.
Yeah. I would hope so.
Which is funny. Yes. No, it is good, because they do the same dance 40 times.
Yeah, well, they should know it by the end. At least they're not falling over and doing the wrong steps.
No, exactly. No, although that does happen. Yeah. And that's, you know, that's why it changes. That, you know, our scores will change, and also our, you know, what we say about the dance will change daily. So that's always good fun.
I'm going to ask you a couple of general musical questions, if that's all right. What is your favourite musical of all time, whether you've been in it or not?
My favourite musical of all time is probably West Side Story, because I've had a long career with that particular show. It was my first show ever. It was the first musical I ever did professionally. I was 17, and as soon as I joined that show, the closing notice went up on the board, so I had 2 weeks in it. But then I got to, it led to other things, and it taught me a lot, you know, about dance, about acting through dance. And I discovered a huge passion for that score as well, and then went on for 4 years to be resident director on it in the West End, also several tours around the UK. And it's so beautifully written. It's so minimal in dialogue, you know, but maximal in effect. It's just wonderful. It's just so, and a beautiful score, and wonderful to dance.
too.
Also, another favourite is Le Cage aux Folles, because that taught me, I guess, how to dance as a woman as well, because we have to dance as men in it, but dancing as a woman is very, very different, how to work in heels, because you're beveling, you're a lot more...
Beveling.
Beveling is where one knocks one knee in and creates a beautiful hourglass line, a Chanel line. You probably... No,
your face me.
Says it
you've
all,
lost
darling.
Me.
Yeah, your
Great.
Face
I,
is saying
I thought
it
beveling
all.
Was something that went round like a glass mirror.
Well, it does,
beveled,
yeah. But a bevel
I didn't know
is,
it could apply to knees.
Yes, it does.
I'm going to go away and think about that.
Yeah, it turns your knee in. I'll demonstrate with you later, darling.
As a girl who doesn't often wear stilettos, I'd love to see that later.
No, but it is very different dancing as a woman, because you're using your hips in a different way. You know, and all of that training back in 1985 has come in, you know, really handy for me playing Hannigan, because when I dance as Hannigan in Easy Street, I have to dance as a woman would dance, you know. And if a woman was to play a man, you would equally have to dance in a butch way and have to straighten up some of your lines,
yeah,
you know, and not sink into hips and not do all of that sort of stuff. So it's quite detailed.
I think this might be why I can't dance.
No.
I think
everyone
probably
can dance.
I could do the man thing, because my hips don't do the... And I certainly can't bevel with my knees, but I...
Well, then, yeah,
well
you
I
could,
don't know, I've never tried.
You could go into
but
musicals
I think
that are all about
I,
sport.
Well, I... I could. Right, you've said which your favourite musical, West Side Story. Is there a single part or a single song that, if you got the chance, you would just love to do?
Yes, I would like to...
That you
to,
haven't done yet.
Yeah, I would like to be in Dreamgirls and play Effie and sing.
Okay.
And I'm telling you. I mean, if that's the truth, we know. I mean, I could never sing that. I could never do it justice. But, you know, I dream of having a voice like that.
Hmm. But you're doing that. You've got Panto coming up in Southampton.
Panto's coming up in Southampton.
You've got the rest of the run here in Annie. And then do you think the future holds more choreography or more performing? Or do you like just mixing them all up?
I like mixing it up. I like doing opera, so I never say no to different things. I've just done a ballet, a new little ballet for the Ballet Boys, which has been going mm-hmm. great. And that's called 14 Days, and that's travelling around the UK at the moment, which opened in at Sadler's Wells a couple of weeks ago. And that was really exciting to do a contemporary piece with just all the boys. That was amazing, because I very rarely get an opportunity to choreograph dancers, because they're generally people that sing, dance and act and play a musical instrument. So it limits what they can do if they've got a violin in their hand, you know.
A bit.
Yeah, or a trumpet, you know, on their embouchure. So, so that is limiting. But it was wonderful just to be with dancers for a change. So I do everything, and I can't limit myself just to one thing. I never know. I mean, I love the 10 weeks in this performing. Fantastic. And Panto's always about Christmas and fun and introducing children to theatre, which I love. Because yeah. it's their first general experience in the live theatre, and then they're not on their iPads or computers, you know,
yeah.
playing
they're
computer
actually
games.
Interacting
they're actually
with
interacting
with live performance.
Yeah, with real things and real people. And I think that gives you some sort of social skill as well. And hopefully we'll teach them to enjoy theatre, you know, to keep our theatres alive and generations to come. You know, we have so many wonderful theatres in this country, and if they all turn into car parks and turn into... flats and things, you know, I think we've lost a bit of culture. So it's just wonderful to keep that continuing. So I champion Panto. I never used to. I used to think it was terrible, you know, and a dreadful art form. But actually, it's really hard work, and you do have to be a good actor. And it's two shows every single day, and they are, it's crippling, you know, it's really amazing. So it's great to do that.
Well, thank you so much for talking to us. I know you've got to go on stage any minute.
I do indeed.
We're really grateful for you giving us time in your dressing room. I hope you enjoy your cupcake.
I love my Guinness cupcake.
When I gave Miranda a cupcake, I had to admit that it had actually been on the floor before she got it.
Oh, that wouldn't bother Miranda.
But it didn't. So I hope you enjoy that in the interval. Lots of luck with the rest of the run with Annie.
Thank you so much.
And with Panto and with the Strictly live tour.
Thank you very, very much.
Thank you. That was the Musicals and Theatre podcast, and if you enjoyed that, then why not subscribe? It's absolutely free to our channel on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also hear me every weekend morning from 6 till 10 on Mellow Magic.